I'm a little bit nervous, I will admit, though as one of my mentors has told me, nervousness is definitely just a sign that you care about what you're doing and you want to do it well. So I will accept and sit with that nervousness and express my gratitude for your attention and just express what an honor it is to be here to share some of what I've learned in the almost 3 years now that I've been coming to practice here. It's also just a really nice opportunity to talk about something other than carcinogens. That's my usual presentation topic these days in my work, and though this is obviously equally important. It's refreshing to dig into a different topic like this, especially one that's so personal. And on that note, I'm going to begin with a story, a personal story that relates to work, because I'm going to be talking about bringing a beginner's mind to work, or taking my Buddhist practice into the workplace. And so the story I want to tell has to do with my dad and his work and lottery tickets. So when I was a kid, my parents bought lottery tickets every week. Like on Saturdays, they would get a number of different tickets. It was just a ritual. We'd go with them. We'd get them. Sometimes my sister and I would get to choose the numbers. And, she and I would sit and we'd talk about what we were going to do. When, it was not if, it was a matter of when, mom and dad were going to win the lottery. And, of course, being little girls, we had dreams of going to Disneyland. We thought that was a given. We also kind of wanted to move from, our forts in the basement to like our own homes. We wanted to have homes next door to each other so we could have our own space. And, we just accepted that our parents were going to be down with that was going to happen. But at one point we asked, we asked my dad just out of curiosity, what would you do first? What's your plan when you win? And he told us that he would quit his job. And I was shocked. Like, I didn't understand this. I thought, he worked for the city of Vancouver. I thought it was so cool to be able to, go into town every day and work in that building and do really meaningful work. I just assumed that he got a lot of joy and satisfaction out of that. Obviously, he did to some extent, but, as I got older, I noticed that there was a lot of suffering there for him at work. And I think some of that was obviously due to the perfectionism that he had that I, inherited on some level and have practiced with now, for years working on. But, also the work environment. Being a pretty empathic kid and human, I observed this and it had a really big impact on me. And seeing him have a nervous breakdown later on in my life, it really upset me. It kind of fueled some of the idealism that I had, but it certainly has had an influence on some of the decisions I've made and some of the kind of the path that I've been on related to work, as well as all sorts of other aspects of the life path. So obviously the lottery ticket story, shows the kind of idealism that I used to have about work and still to some extent do have. And that idealism got a pretty big reality check when I started working, of course. And particularly in the work environment that I'm in, I'm sure it's not unique in academia, but it can definitely be a really toxic environment, driven by ego and competition, knee-jerk reactions, a lot of defensive behavior, and a lot of conflict. I knew this going in. I've been working in this field for a long time in graduate school. I saw it and I chose to continue working in this area because I communicate science. So there's definitely some skills that I'm able to offer in terms of being kind of a bridge or a liaison between those who use research and those who do it or who create knowledge. So it's a niche and I've been I've been really dedicated to it. But there's been some suffering there. I found it really challenging at times, and I've coped in different ways. One being by, because I've definitely always had this very empathic, very spiritual side, and I thought being a yoga teacher in addition to a science communicator was a good balance. But having two different careers and having them be so separate, for so many years really kind of burned me out, actually. And then there was that going on. About 3 years ago, I kind of started to feel that burnout. And I also had a pretty big crisis in my personal life. And that's what really brought me here. And I don't know if any of you can relate to that. That seems to be pretty common. When things get rough, when things fall apart, we come here and, we get motivated to establish a practice. So I did that. I started coming to Zen U on Monday nights on a weekly basis. And I wouldn't say that I was particularly inspired to be a bodhisattva. I didn't know what that meant, actually. you know, but I definitely wanted some tools to deal with this like weight in my chest, you know, that I felt kind of throughout the day. And what I found was this practice not only helped me to work with that, you know, and to get through the crisis that I was faced with grace and with patience and kindness and curiosity, but, you know, has influenced all sorts of aspects of my life. And, you know, one most significantly, actually, and that I've been really surprised by is my relationships at work and my approach to my work. So that's what I want to talk about. So as I mentioned, I'm a science communicator, so I translate jargon, basically, into English, and often beyond, so kind of try to take the research and the knowledge and turn it into language or package it in different ways that make sense to those who develop policy and who make decisions about practice, for example, and this is all related to carcinogens and cancer, so it's a very meaningful work, it's very change-making, there's really an opportunity to make a difference, and I'm very passionate about it. I often don't know what I'm doing. It's challenging. And this practice is encouraging me to feel okay about that. So that's been great. And of course, you know, beginner's mind has a great deal to do with that. So, you know, it kind of helps me to approach all those challenges and responsibilities with curiosity. Kind of helps me to, you know, kind of supports me in getting to know these different audiences that are receiving the research and using the research, you know, to better understand their barriers and their opportunities. So just being really curious about what their day is like and you know, what, you know, ways that we can work together. And it keeps me pretty open to input and feedback on my own work and what works best and what works doesn't, and as a manager included. So beginner's mind supports me immensely in showing up with, you know, energy and enthusiasm and passion. But still, I get pretty drained a lot of the time. You know, this culture that I'm embedded in does not have mindfulness as a core value. You know, knee-jerk reactions happen all the time in meetings, in emails, kind of on a daily basis. I get at least one or two. You know, I get frustrated with the pace of progress, you know, but there are systems in place that that are making that the case. And I don't know that those systems are really going to change in my lifetime. So that's challenging. You know, nor can I really change, you know, who gravitates to this kind of work environment, right? So, you know, as much as I'd love to come and stand at a podium and speak to, you know, my workplace like this and expect them to listen to me and set some kind of ground rules for engagement and for working together, I mean, I've kind of tried some variations of that and it hasn't worked very well. So what do? I mean, I sit on the cushion and cultivate mindfulness, and that, you know, I start to bring curiosity to those situations where I feel really drained and start to ask, well, why do I feel really drained? Because, you know, I can commit to change the way that I show up to those situations and how I respond, and I can aim to not react in those situations and to respond in debt instead. So obviously I've gathered some data on what I've noticed over these last 3 years, kind of bringing this practice into my workplace. You know, become pretty intimate with several tapes that come up, you know, particularly in meeting situations. And so I want to just share some of those and you know, perhaps they will relate to you. So many of the learnings that I've had, you know, about these tapes and in these situations are rooted in the paramitas. So the, you know, the guidance for taking practice out into the world. We've covered these through Zen Yu a bit in the past. And the two in particular that come up are Shila, or the mindfulness trainings, or the Zen precepts, which I'd like to take one day. You know, that help us to look deeply at the causes of suffering. And the other is Dana, which is offering or generosity. So I'm going to explore these examples kind of with the paramitas in mind. So the first example is in group meetings where I'm facilitating, for example, you know, where I've made an agenda, I've put in all sorts of effort to make sure that everyone's time is used wisely. And there's just this chronic lack of paying attention. You know, there's noise in the background because everyone's in different places. So there's people on the phone. There's like someone baking in the background, and there's someone driving, and there's someone walking, and so I'm, you know, I'm often trying to mute people, and that doesn't work very well. So, you know, I find often there's you know, just different colleagues who speak because they want to be heard, and aren't necessarily, and maybe just haven't realized that we just discussed that point. point because they've been multitasking, for example, maybe. It's really hard to keep everyone engaged and to have meaningful, you know, conversation and dialogue. And so I end up getting pretty frustrated and drained. And I used to really dread these meetings, but I'm the one who facilitates them. So, you know, I started to notice, okay, well, what is so draining about these? And I realized that that in sitting in that facilitator's position, I really want to be respected, and I really want my contribution to be valued. And that was what was being challenged. Like, I felt like, this is really disrespectful behavior. My efforts as a facilitator aren't being appreciated. And of course, then, you know, it kind of creates this spiral of thoughts, or you know, kind of tornado, you know, around my, so like with just self-critical thoughts, and you know, around kind of not my work not being enough, and this sort of thing. So that's really interesting. So that's one example. Another type of tape I notice also when I'm you know, when I'm facilitating meetings is kind of more of a righteous one around, like, why can't everyone just be more like me? Like, why can't everyone bring some mindfulness here? And you know, and of course, we all know, like, that's the root cause of suffering, right? Like, wanting things to be different than they are. But yet, it's a tape. It comes up. You know, when I'm not facilitating, you know, some of the tapes are a little bit different. I mean, particularly if others are checking out, the tape might be telling me, like, I got better things to do, and I want to bring some satisfaction into my day, so I might start multitasking myself. And you know, and that feels good because I'm ticking boxes and I'm clearing my inbox. But you know, like, yeah, and maybe that feels like Donna, maybe that feels like an offering, maybe that feels like, you know, a contribution, but it's valued, obviously, also, you know, this, the ability to multitask, you know, particularly in the workplace, and I see colleagues doing it. But it upsets me when people do that, you know, when I'm facilitating, and I don't know that that's really the kind of offering I want to make. Like, it's not an offering of presence. It's an offering of like, just, I don't know, feeding my ego, right? Bringing me some satisfaction in my to-do list. So that's really interesting. So increasingly, my Donna, or the offering I'm wanting to bring, is one of single tasking, you know, kind of one where I'm able to bring more presence. So that's interesting. And the last example I wanted to bring up that relates to meetings and relationships in the workplace has to do with one-on-one meetings. And there's more of a habitual pattern there that some of you may be able to relate to, and it's called gossip. You know, particularly when there are tensions or there are conflicts in the workplace, I just find it so easy to start talking about this person and that person with this colleague and that colleague. And at the time, certainly, you know, it might feel satisfying because I've just unloaded, you know, some tension that I felt, you know, for a long time. But when I sit with that afterwards, there's something that feels rotten about it. And I think that this practice has helped me really tune in and notice that, that feeling of rottenness. You know, and I think it's a symptom of separating myself from others. Like, even, you know, okay, I'm a scientist, I mean, and like even physics tells us that we are all made of the same stuff, right? You know, we're all connected. There's not, you know, us and them, or, you know, the other. So yeah, and we're all affected by these kleshas, or the roots of suffering, right? Like a delusion and greed and aversion, like Kate mentioned at the beginning of the sit. So if I can kind of use mindfulness to not get drawn into that habitual pattern of gossiping and speaking ill of people, you know, it's a practice of right speech, and it definitely feels much better. So my work and I guess my, you know, my learning is really that this practice helps me to be aware of all these tapes and all these habitual patterns, and to use things like Sheila and Donna, you know, to bring mindful attention to these interactions and all of these relationships. So now I can really aim to sit in these meetings, and I know that if I root my feet into the floor and I stay connected to my breath as I do on my mat or on my cushion, I can be more present. You know, I can stay connected to my intention. And in cases where I'm facilitating, for example, and I'm being faced with inattention, you know, instead of getting really agitated and maybe, you know, reacting or getting upset or feeling drained, you know, I can request that awareness and focus, you know, without getting so worked up about how insulting it is, and without taking it so personally, which I see as kind of more of a reaction as opposed to a response. And essentially, in doing so, you know, I'm able to model the kind of communication we practice at ZenU and here, right, around, active listening and mindful speech. So that practice every Monday night, you know, in a circle, although sometimes feels a little bit awkward, has been so meaningful and supportive to be able to bring that into the workplace. So I'm going to conclude and wrap up by, you know, kind of reiterating that, you know, this practice certainly isn't going to change the way academia operates. It's not going to change the culture of workplaces everywhere, but it does model the kind of patience and compassion and mindfulness, you know, kind of for others, being the change, as Gandhi said. And I've noticed small differences in my colleagues, and I'm trying not to be too attached to those changes, though, you know, they're quite positive. I must admit that that's satisfying. So yeah, when I first started practicing, you know, I really viewed this as something that was helping me to deal with the crisis, and with the various ways that I messed up. So I saw it as a way to kind of fix myself and to heal myself, and obviously it did do that. There's still room to practice, but the perspective I have now, in particularly looking at practice as it relates to work, is that it really does help me to pursue that kind of idealism that I expressed as a little girl, you know, to my dad. And, you know, taking on tough work, change-making work, having a lot of responsibilities and challenges, you know, it's really, like, so supportive to have this, you know, this practice, you know, in order to be able to go out and do that. There's always more to pay attention to and more change to make and more tapes to notice. And so thank you all for kind of modeling that and supporting, you know, people like me in these kinds of journeys. I've really enjoyed listening to some of these talks about some of the various ways others, you know, bring their practice out into the world. And I look forward to hearing more of them. I think we'll be doing some at ZenU for sure. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Allison.